Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. That's right, the here, the place to come anytime you need information, and we have it. Dr. Joe Usinski's with me today. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you doing? Great to be here today.
Yeah, doing okay. You know, I'm having my smooth vanilla latte.
Well, you know, unlike my colleagues here in the political science department, I am neither hungover nor disappointed today. Since I am a libertarian, I expect to lose all the time, so... instead of election day being like Christmas for me, it's more like any other day. So I feel fine, and everyone else is bleary-eyed.
Now you know, in a way that's good because you don't really feel disappointed.
Yeah, I guess if you expect to do poorly, then no matter what happens, it's not that bad. But here in Florida, the Republicans, it looks like they're going to get the Senate seat, even though it's going to go to a recount, and it looks like they got the governor's seat. So a lot of Democrats are fairly upset. But the one thing that I am happy about is my colleague Donna Shalala, whose office is right upstairs from mine. She actually won Congressional District 27 here, so I'm pretty happy to have a friend in the Congress.
Ah, there you go. So now you can get all the things you want. That's how it works, right?
I don't know how much one person of Congress can really get for you, but I am pretty sure that if I called her.
Yeah, donate to the party.
Yeah. But she is a different party than me altogether, so I don't know what feasibly she could do that would make me happy anyway.
Now, you know, a lot of people in the last week, there's this, I think of you when I hear these nice comments. there was comments about how the libertarians are just embarrassed Republicans.
Hmm.
Do you think there's a lot of Republicans that have jumped over to the Libertarian Party?
No, because we're just as tiny as we were some number of years ago. And what sort of bothers me is that a lot of these never Trump Republicans, instead of supporting Gary Johnson, who was a Republican turned Libertarian, decided to support Hillary Clinton. Had party leaders started to get behind the libertarian cause or libertarian candidates, they could probably have dented Trump a little bit, but they chose not to. And to me, it just sort of shows what the Republicans are really about, is they don't have any real principles. They'll just go with wherever the wind blows.
Yeah. Now, another thing, actually, and joining in our conversation today on these current events, we brought in author. He's been on the show before. Excellent man, good at politics, and Patrick Adendel. Thank you for sitting in with us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
So feel free to comment on anything that comes in.
You talked about Florida, which is obviously probably the most disappointing state on the surface. I'd obviously thought that Gillum and Nelson should win by a couple of points, and it looks like they haven't. But having said that, notwithstanding what your other guest just said, the way I look at it, Ben Nelson on paper is 30,000 behind, and absentee ballots might reduce that to 5,000 deficit, just on regular math. So he's not out of it. I think Gillum has withdrawn his concession, I think. Because as Nelson picks up seats from sort of still to be counted type stuff, Gillum will too. So both the margins of loss of, I think right now Nelson's is 0.4 and Gillum's 0.6, and it looks like those numbers will track down a bit more in terms of margin of loss. Nelson is not done yet. I mean, sorry, Nelson particularly is not done. Florida's not totally over yet.
Yeah, it's not totally over yet, but I mean, in a big state like this, I mean, it sounds like a small percentage sounds small, but in a big state, it's actually a lot of votes. So,
it's 30,000, but I got a feeling if I saw a number of absentee votes have to count, it's 113 split 65, 35 or whatever. That gets it pretty damn close, and that's just assuming that the absentee ballot split is as projected, which obviously nobody knows. Often you find out in these states, because urban areas come in last because they've got higher populations, they're harder to count and all the rest, often the popular vote, especially in general elections, the popular vote just usually carries on going up for the Democrats for like 2 months after the election. Now, Florida, I'm not saying that'll happen in Florida, but that's the sort of trend, is like the rural votes tend to come in first and easier to count, and then the urban ones tend to be more complicated and there tend to be more questions, and if there's voter suppression going on, it's likely to be happening in those areas rather than the rural areas. So that's sometimes where you find some sneaky stuff going on. So, it's probably a 10% chance. I think the New York Times has it more than that, but that number keeps fluctuating. There's a 10% chance that Nelson wins, I guess.
And would you give that same percentage to governor candidate Gillum?
Well, no, it'd be slightly lower because he's performing slightly worse in the split.
Yeah.
So Gillum, I haven't actually looked at his numbers. I was more interested in Nelson's numbers because it was closer. But he's still got a chance. And obviously, this happens in Florida every year. I mean, every election, it seems. It happened in 2000. I mean, most of us don't really accept the results of 2000. I mean, but it happened. I mean, the Supreme Court weighed in and did their thing, which most people thought was not fair. The whole thing of hanging chads is ridiculous. I remember my train ticket, Long Island Railroad train ticket, has those hanging chads. So clearly, I know which ones have been punched and which ones haven't. even though they still hang there. So I, you know, it's not like I can sit, ask for a free ride.
I mean, so let me ask you a bigger overarching question. Do you think, you know, what do we need to do to overhaul voting? I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, newer technologies brought into the voting system. We don't have the hanging chads anymore, at least I don't think.
Well, clearly, I mean, I think until people have confidence in election procedures, you've got to have a paper record. That should be the law until everyone's comfortable. At some point, voting's got to be made a lot easier for everyone. Here in New York, there's no early voting. I don't know why. But, you know, at some point, if we can purchase things with a fingerprint ID on an iPhone, I don't see why we can't vote that way. But at some point in the future, not yet, we can't get there. We have to sort out the problems first and having a proper record. In the UK, we have, what, 600 MPs? Through my living memory, I cannot remember an MP complaining about being cheated out of an election. It just does not happen. It does not need to happen. This is another American-made problem.
Yeah, and so let me ask you another question, since you're comparing the U.S. to the U.K. Do you think a lot of this is a federalism issue where you have so many layers of government involved in this?
Well, remember, each state has its own laws regarding voter rules and degrees of voter suppression. I think it's absolutely nuts that districts are done by parties. It should be nonpartisan. And I just read last night Colorado has voted in a nonpartisan structure for how to district the seats in Colorado. And I read through it and I thought, well, that would probably work. It's not that tough. Americans keep saying, well, who's not partisan? In England, we have the nonpartisan civil service. But in America, you don't really have nonpartisans working in government. The judges are not partisan. They're elected, which is absurd. So you don't seem to have many nonpartisan bodies. The obvious solution is go to professors like Finland. That's why Finland's so successful. The economy is designed by professors. But you mentioned professor, and you know, to red meat Americans, oh my God, they must be biased. having expertise and being able to sort out a problem is a form of bias in this country. But it sounds like, just reading quickly through what Colorado has done, they may have found a solution to having a nonpartisan, it's very involved, I mean, there are like these eight steps to get to a place where people would be comfortable that Colorado can be drawn in a nonpartisan fashion at the next election.
Well, the way I would do it, I mean, one solution that's out there now, and maybe this is what Colorado's doing, is to not have congressional districts split zip codes. So once you do that, you get rid of a lot of the
maybe, more extreme gerrymandering. Maybe, but at least zip codes are somewhat random. They're not. I mean, you're probably right. I haven't even thought through that thing, but the first thing that pops into my head, a zip code is better than having cheats design it.
Yeah, but another thing you could do too is get rid of the district entirely, so that, you know, if the idea of the House is to represent the people directly, why does it have to be by geographic district? Is there a way within states to assign
everybody?
You're
getting way too creative in a country that can't sort out basic clean water.
You know, but I guess what I'm trying to say here is there are a number of solutions that could be brought to bear on this, and you know, we're just sort of staying inside the box if we're like,
you're a dreamer because you're a libertarian and you're like being a Mets fan and or whatever. It's like it's going to be a painful process. I always try and keep to things that are easily achievable or keep to simple facts. I try, especially when I write, I'm happy to give opinions right now, but I try and avoid opinions about stuff. But the thought of some complex reform like you're suggesting, people have great ideas for, you know, citizens, all sorts of stuff, but if it's too obscure, I think America just needs to fix the plumbing first before building an extension.
Yeah, well, we can't afford to do that.
There are so many simple things that should be happening, like not cheating, crime being, you know, a political crime being accountable. You know, and unfortunately, we got that check back. There'll be a check now in Congress. So the U.S. government and maybe governors, maybe Brian Kemp, this is pure speculation, if he wins, it will be due to voter suppression. Did he go over the top and break laws? I suspect he did, but I have no idea. But then if he did, there are now going to be consequences for that, because he can be properly investigated. Up until now, there is no consequence for criminal cheating.
Now, what you know in your book that Deliverance, you talk about how to eradicate the destructive forces destroying the American democracy. What do you mean by that?
Well, the first book lays the groundwork explaining what went wrong between 2000 and 2014. I think there's a total breakdown in critical thinking. There's a total breakdown in people being able to discern what a fact is or not. And that's gotten made worse, not so much because of the Republicans themselves, but which obviously it suits them because they don't actually have any constructive policy issues to actually solve problems. But it's gotten worse because of a couple of things that's nobody's fault. It's gotten worse because of the way social media is distributed. And we have no immunity to nonsense being written online. I always take Tesla as a good nonpartisan example. Nobody in America knows that the Model 3 is the best-selling, when August is the best-selling passenger car in the United States. Like 80-90% of articles are either anti-Tesla or just coming up with false information about the company, driven by people who would profit by their demise. And yet, this is an American company with the potential to take down the Japanese and the Germans and, to a lesser extent, other American companies. And why any American would be knocking that is mind-blowing. But then you had so much negative coverage, and everything's a Tesla killer. Every new car, which doesn't, every new battery or whatever it is a supposed Tesla killer, which invariably the stories are incorrect. So it's clickbait. Now you take that to and it's not proper journalism. And you take that back to politics, and everybody on a website, it's not simply just Fox News. It's all the people posting online, and a lot of conspiracy theories too, to some extent, that are just throwing people off their game. And there's no immunity to false information right now. And that's compounded by foreign interference. Other countries, primarily the Russians, obviously, have figured out how to undermine our democratic system and undermine the Western alliance and trying to destroy NATO, trying to disunite Europe. And they've been very, very successful at it, weakening, again, the West. So... And there's been no immunity to all these new factors. Now, hopefully, we need to train society into, first of all, fact-checking. And certain social media is being more regulated, whether it be Facebook or whatever, to prevent these Russian bots or whatever, or people trying to spread hate, putting Americans against each other, putting Bernie Sanders supporters at Hillary's throats and vice versa, because that achieves the same result. So... we have no immunity to that, and hopefully we will start building immunities and laws to prevent that. And that was, I think, a big factor in why we all misunderstood the results of the 2016 election. Nobody really saw Trump winning.
So would you be – you're advocating for the government to sort of regulate speech on social media companies?
No, but I think what they do – I regulate speech. America has – stricter freedom of speech laws than, say, the United Kingdom. I'm not one for repressing speech, but I think when you see somebody spreading... I think they're doing whatever they can right now. I mean, in Facebook, they're trying to make sure that I'm not a Russian bot and all the rest, and all sorts of procedures you have to go through. And that's fair enough. I mean, obviously, I think Facebook and Amazon have way too much power, so in a way, you can't really... It's tough to appeal stuff if they're getting stuff wrong. So that's a major concern. So you need both their ability to restrict, but you also need to regulate to make sure that they're not holding monopoly positions on this stuff. So it's like there's no easy answer to what the question you just asked.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me very nervous to say, well, the Russians put out a bunch of bots, so therefore we need to have the government, who I would not trust to regulate speech.
I think we all need awareness of it, and that's the best, and education of it, and that's the best line of defense. But clearly, and I haven't thought about Facebook for a while, but they're under scrutiny from both the Russian and the English governments. I think the way they helped Cambridge Analytica and all the rest, this is dangerous stuff, and you need to try and figure out some types of regulation. This is very tricky stuff, and I don't know exactly what they should do, but obviously Facebook's being targeted right now, I think, and so far I don't have a problem with the way it's being done.
Yeah, it bothers me because we say, well, we have an authoritarian government who, or at least the argument goes, we have an authoritarian government in Russia that helped install an authoritarian leader in the U.S., so now our answer is to give that authoritarian government...
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I get it.
Power to control...
You've got to be really careful.
Our political speech, and I think it's on very thin ice once you start doing that, because... it sounds easy just to say, well, we'll get rid of the hate speech. But everyone has their own list of hate speech.
But you're not getting I'm not sure if you're getting rid of that. I think you're preventing Facebook profiting from money coming from foreign agents that are colluding. So I think, in a way, some of that stuff is being investigated more carefully. And I think Facebook needs to be a bit more careful where they get their advertising revenue from.
I mean, another thing I would say, too, is I think there's a lot of – I mean, it's clear that the Russians, interfered by putting in these bots and all these fake posts. It's not clear that it affected the outcome. I mean, political scientists are very reticent to say that it had any effect whatsoever.
I think it'd be dead easy to affect the outcome. If you gave me the power to get into the brain of a conservative brain, I think I'd have no problem triggering certain results.
Yeah, but you already said the operative thing. If you get into a conservative brain, that person was already going to vote conservative to begin with.
No, but you can trigger them to vote to get out and do more. And it's quite easy to trigger that person, but with certain type of false news memes. And I think, like, Cambridge Analytica, they experimented with that with Ted when they originally worked for Ted Cruz. And I've forgotten what state that they targeted, and Ted Cruz, I think it was the first big state he won. Basically, I think as a result of using Cambridge Analytica data and knowing how to target people.
Yeah, but the people who study this, I mean, they say when you're talking about elections where you're spending millions or billions of dollars, I mean, seeing a handful of Facebook posts or some bots on Twitter just is a tiny drop, in the bucket. Because people are getting just battered with messages all day long for months on end, and to say, well, this Russian bot caused the election to flip. I mean, it's sort of putting a lot of power on a small amount of messages.
Well, I'm not sure if it was a small amount of messages, but I mean, we're not sure. But I have written about Cambridge Analytica, especially how it impacted. I think it did impact the Brexit vote to some extent, and a lot of other reasons why the Brexit vote occurred, which nobody in England expected it to happen. And again, the same thing, nobody, even on election night, nobody expected Trump to win. And there was a moment last night where the Nate Silver had the chances of Dems getting the House fall from 90% to 30% within a spread of 30 minutes. And you're going to think, how could that happen? Now, fortunately, thank God we pulled away from that. But I certainly think that a conservative voter is easier to motivate, trigger, than a progressive voter, because they're more fearful. And that's, I don't know if that explains. Obviously, they upped the ante in racism in the Republican Party and Trump, and that probably was what turned in the caravan, this whole nonsense about the caravan thing. Could have created a 2-point difference, and could have changed the results in Florida.
I mean, there are studies on this that find personality differences between liberals and conservatives. Personally, I think some of it's overblown. But when I study, who do people think are conspiring against them? I mean, right and left look exactly the same. It's just that they're mirror images of each other. They just have different boogeymen. Whereas the right is concerned about communists and liberals, the left is concerned about corporations and conservatives. If you say that foreigners are coming
in. What's the right concern? What's the right concern about when it comes to The left? I've forgotten.
So the right, you know, when we give them a list of groups, they'll tend to pick out things like communists and liberals.
Yeah, which is obvious nonsense. So what's the other thing? And whereas on the Republican side, if you're trying to trigger a Republican, you're triggering racism lack of gun control or whatever. Or, you know, nonsense about healthcare. And these things, those are things where people actually end up dying. Whereas, you know, worrying about communism, that's just a phantom. There's virtually no left wing in the United States at all anyway. It's, you know, if you take Bernie Sanders, who's considered the most left wing candidate by most, you know, most of society, if you take his views, other than you could debate, I guess, the validity, the necessity, the worthwhileness of having free public university education for everybody, that's debatable, but everything else he says is a no-brainer. I mean, single payer, that's an obvious solution. And to reform America's medical healthcare system, which is the most absurd healthcare system in the developed world.
So to get you straight, you think that the best way to reform American healthcare would have the government take it over?
Not as entirely. I think you start off with the public option and the maths will do the rest. Now, in the UK, you have the National Health Service, but you also have the ability to buy private insurance. And people like myself, and certain, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with the National Health System, you have private health insurance. And that tends to be a lot cheaper than you would expect, because in most cases, for most dire diseases, you actually voluntarily end up going to the NHS rather than your private health carrier.
Yeah.
So, yes, public option leading to a form of single payer would be the clear solution. And the only reason why we didn't get it and why we got Obamacare, which is a better than nothing, and it's a patchwork solution, a band-aid solution, the only reason why we didn't get it was because obviously the drug industries and the pharmaceuticals and the health and the insurance companies rallied around people like Joe Lieberman to prevent it from happening.
Where do you think things are going to, what's going to happen in January? Is the Democratic House going to focus on trying to bring down Trump, or is it going to focus on trying to get health care and other, you know, some of the infrastructure and some of the Congress work done?
Well, it's not a matter of, you got to go after criminal activity, and so they're going to start investigating potential people who are breaking the law. I don't think that should be considered a partisan activity. That's Congress's job. In terms of going after other things, that depends on, you know, still Congress can't get much done on the domestic agenda on health care and all this. I don't know. I don't know the system well enough, and this, again, not what I write about, but I presume you still need the support of the Senate. Now, the Senate may be having some sort of maybe more moderate going forward than it has been because of Congress and because of the way the wind might be blowing. They maybe see the wind is blowing. And especially as Trump maybe gets more in a quagmire with his legal problems. So, you know, they might start backing off supporting this guy. So maybe Congress does become a bit more moderate and the Senate becomes a bit more moderate and they can work with Congress. So that would be good news.
Well, I mean, I would prefer that these investigations be nonpartisan, but I mean, they're partisan. They're not held by courts.
The Mueller investigation is not partisan.
Yeah,
it's
but anything,
basically led by
yeah, but anything that would take place in the anything that would take place in the Senate or in the House is going to be partisan. It's not a court.
We need subpoena power, and the Congress needs subpoena power so you can get people to testify under oath. I agree. Anything happening in Congress tends to be partisan. But there are things going on regarding around the country regarding whether it's Trump's financial organization, which the New York Times just wouldn't have posted unless they'd done a really well-sourced story. They just basically said the Trump organization has effectively over the years stolen $400 million from taxpayers.
Let's say that's true, and if it is, it should be investigated by hopefully a nonpartisan body, and the wrongdoers be brought to justice. But you already have a situation today where you have both parties saying they're going to use investigations for partisan purposes, not for truth-finding purposes. She's going to use investigations as a way to get legislative goals and to use them, quote-unquote, strategically. And then Trump's already been tweeting about how he's going to use Senate investigations to go after them. So, that, I mean, so far this is not about truth-finding.
But remember, you know, Republicans' investigations are pure witch hunts. They spend $100 million of taxpayer money investigating the Clintons, and that's totally down the drain. They found nothing. The Mueller investigation, which I miss, is what I keep going on about, is basically a self-financing investigation. They've already fined Paul Manafort $40 million, and they'll probably, I'm sure there'll be more fines coming down the pike at some point. The taxpayer will be made whole by that. I'm not aware of too many, I'm not aware of too many of these investigations that the Democrats do. Like, for instance, they investigated Benghazi time and time and time again. I mean, I don't think Democrats are the type of individuals who just beat their head against the brick wall.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
They're not going anywhere, but just because it sounds good. Just because it motivates the base. They were just investigating Hillary time and time again just to motivate the base. I just don't think the Democrats have a history of behaving like that.
So your argument is that the Republicans are corrupt and the Democrats are not.
Corruption is a nonpartisan problem. But the problem is basic intellectual integrity and honesty when it comes to lying. So I would argue the Republicans lie. Their lies are 1,000% more voluminous than Democratic lies. So people who say both parties are the same are part of the problem.
Democrats have a monopoly on truth? Is that what you want to say?
I just said what I said, which was Republican lies are 1,000% more voluminous than Democratic lies. They lie. When Das Spiegel investigated the German magazine, investigated, I think it was the 2012 conventions, I think it was Romney and Ryan, they found that the lies told in both conventions compared to the Democrats and the Republicans were lying 400% more often. But then their lies were far worse. So when they lie, people die. I studied the supposed lies of the Democrats, and I've compared them with the lies of the Republicans. So the Republican lies are just more dangerous. Because people
The 2013 lie of the year, according to PolitiFact, was Barack Obama, if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. 2013 lie of the year.
Let's talk about that lie of the year, shall we? First of all, he probably really thought that Obamacare would have everybody's plan stay in place, But what happened was some of those plans were illegal, and they had to be taken off the table. Now, they weren't taken off the table
because they made them illegal, and he knew that's a necessary consequence of what would happen.
They weren't taken off the table in 2013. He delayed those laws year after year after year until eventually, and so some people lost their health care because they were illegal. He was trying to get people's health care, unlike Republicans, who lie and take away their health care. There's a big difference between a white lie and a sort of accidental lie and an odious, insidious lie.
Okay, so it's okay. To lie if you are pushing for government health care.
I don't think he meant to lie. It's just now deemed to be a lie. And he did everything he could to make it not a lie. He delayed the law for like 3 or 4 years. In order to give everyone a chance to comply with the law, and there's still people who weren't. And
so
if you look at the consequences, if you look at
the lies are okay, and if they don't support,
I didn't say they're okay, but it's not a lie that leads to people dying. Before Obama, if we had had no Obamacare, by 2020 there would have been 70 million Americans without health care. Right? Right now, I don't know what the number is. It could be 20 million because of Obamacare. So we've given, say, 50 million people health care, and people are going to live. Whereas the Republicans have no, they have replace and repeal. They have no replacement. We all know that. There is nothing. People will, and they lie about it, and people will die. And that's why I say Republican lies are far worse than Democratic lies. They lie about Planned Parenthood, selling fetuses, or government spending money on abortions. When you lie about that, people die. Maternity deaths in America is the only country in the world where maternity deaths have gone up. And we've got worse maternity deaths than third world countries because we're going backwards in this debate about women's health care. Ignorance is deadly. I'm not aware of too many Democratic lies that lead to people dying.
People learn certain conspiracies and base them as true, and then they build on that.
Again, Onion was really talking about, it's really talking about the human race. I'm talking about us all, you and me and everybody else. I think we all have levels of delusion. We all think we can solve problems, and we write books, and we go on radio, and yet still the bad guys win. We keep trying, and we're delusional about it. But I think you've got to ask yourself, how many levels of delusion do you need before you enter into a vegetative state? And I think that happens in a lot of countries, and it's happened primarily amongst Republican voters. They are so uninformed about basic issues that they really can't critically analyze the problems of today, you know, whether it be global warming. What is a Christian? What is, you know, whether it be supply-side economics, whether it be how do you deal with Iran? The Republican voter isn't able to discuss any of these things. When you see the rise of white supremacy caused by the president, many Republican voters don't see what's causing this rise of white supremacy, or they're enjoying it.
So you're saying they're stuck in these several levels of illusion, delusion. So they can no longer fathom what is actually real.
I give numerous examples. I give polls and whatever. This is not opinions. These are numbers. You know, 68% of Republicans don't believe in evolution. I don't know why one would have a chat with. Talk about any conspiracy theory that somebody can't think critically. 65% thought that taxes when you reduce taxes on those earning more than $400,000 would impact them. So you have people like Joe the Plumber talking absolute nonsense. Yet he got lots of residents, and John McCain loved him. You have, 69% don't accept global warming. 67% believe that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. 62% think that Mitt Romney needs more credit than Obama for snagging Bin Laden. I mean, it goes on and on and on. 65% of Republican voters basically know nothing. There were no tax cuts under Obama except for sun tanning and smoking and smokers. And yet they all thought they got, none of them acknowledged that. 90% thought they had tax increases under Obama. I mean, it's just total nonsense. Until you can start thinking critically and getting your facts right, why are we talking about more complicated things?
So do you think that this sort of delusional thinking doesn't exist on the left?
Yes, of course it is, but it's less dangerous. So maybe if I argue that two-thirds of Republicans are fundamentally some sort of bigoted in some fashion, you could probably argue one-third of Democrats are. I mean, one of the things that really horrified me about Hillary Clinton in 2008, and this would have been huge for the country, just done the right thing. She was campaigning against Obama in some swings, in some tight Democratic states, like West Virginia. And yet 33% of Democratic primary voters in West Virginia basically would refuse to vote for Obama based purely on the color of his skin. If Hillary Clinton had just said, go take your vote elsewhere, she could have made that into a major teachable moment. And she would have stood tall as a politician.
You know, one thing that we find over and over again when we ask voters factual questions is that the vast majority are not very well informed, and I'm not sure that the people on the left are that much more informed than people on the right.
Correct.
When you ask basic questions like who's the vice president or who's the chief justice.
That's ignorant, but it's not deadly ignorance, is it?
Yeah, but then even when we get to things like what you're talking about, like, you know, we had, 40% of, in some polls of the Democratic Party saying they thought Bush was behind 9/11. I mean, those are ridiculous beliefs, too, that a lot of people on the left bought into.
Well, conspiracy theory thrives in America. American radio is part of the problem. Why we're so bad? Living in New York, with all due respect to you guys, Morris, I'm not sure if I have access to your radio station. I have not found talk radio that I can actually listen to. If you take NPR, well, the problem with that is just boring. But I can't find any talk radio that makes me more informed. So I end up listening to music or podcasts or whatever, or satellite radio, the BBC or whatever. But it's really tough to get educated, more educated, informed, listening to American talk radio.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's funny. I've written a whole book about George Bush Sr. Sorry, the Bush family. And avoided all the pitfalls of all the conspiracy theories, which is, they're not all wrong, but once you go down them, you go nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I would say one other thing, too. I mean, as you were talking about Bernie, I mean, he based his campaign on this shaky idea that the 1% controls all our politics and all our economics, which is, it's just not true. Yeah, he was able to garner 40% of the Democratic vote on this 1% idea.
The 1% is poetic license, but it's also convenient. Obviously, not all the 1% are problematic. It's probably 50% of 1%. And it's not 1% that's problematic. It's probably 0.001%. You have, like, 8 people controlling the wealth of half the country. And you have families, maybe 100 families that contribute, 2012 contributed 60% of all election donations. American politics is run purely on money. You have people like Sheldon Adelson who can feel like they can buy themselves a politician or two or a president. Money wins at the end of the day, and that's America's fundamental problem. You have congressmen who spend every congressman spends 5.5 hours a day collecting money. Thus, they're not listening to their constituents. They're listening to the people who give their money. Thus, they're not advising, they're telling their constituents what to believe rather than listening to what their constituents believe. And that's how you get this massive spread of misinformation, because congressmen have very little motivation to help the voters.
Well, I think you're vastly oversimplifying a few things, but I don't think you should be apologizing for Bernie Sanders coming out saying the 1% controls everything, because his rhetoric.
I'm not apologizing. I was defending the thing.
It's not true. I mean, it's frankly not true. You know, we can have reasonable conversations about income inequality, but saying that the 1%, quote unquote, has a greed that knows no end, is making it hard for you to survive. And they rigged everything against you. It's just not true. I mean, the economy, the political system are much more confused.
If they're going to have tax cuts, why do you not have tax cuts that stimulate the economy far more effectively than the ones they introduce? What was the point of this tax cut they just had? Clearly, that's designed by the 1%.
You agree with Bernie that the 1% controls everything? Is that where you are?
That sounds rather conspiracy. I didn't say control everything, but money controls everything. And bad money tends to go, if you look at the good money in America, they've given up with America. If you take Bill Gates with his $60 billion, they're trying to save world hunger. And they're succeeding. And they're saying themselves, I'm guessing, I'm not going to bother with America. First of all, I get no bang for my buck. And secondly, they don't want my help.
Okay. So, I guess what I'm trying to drive at here is that you have ridiculous rhetoric coming out from leaders on the left. Bernie Sanders is a good example of this.
Except when you fact check them by PolitiFact, their numbers and truthfulness are way different from the truthfulness of the Republican Party. So it's relative. You can't expect all those politicians to be totally honest all the time. That's absurd.
I don't expect any of them to be totally honest, but I don't walk around saying that one party has a monopoly.
You have to play your audience to some extent.
Yes, but what I don't like is saying, well, you know, both parties lie, but, you know, if you lie in favor of policies that I like, then it's okay. And if you lie in policies that it's not okay.
What I said was Republicans lie way more, far more, and far more seriously. That's not justified. Obviously, if the big weakness on the left might be, and it's accidental, every now and again, there's satire sites that on the Democratic side that's spread occasionally. It's not that often that you spread a false meme. And to me, there's nothing more dangerous than accidentally spreading a false meme, because that means that makes it okay when the Republicans do it all the time. I've been trying to debate with trumpeters, I call them trumpeters, on social media for years. And I now have a reward. If somebody can actually rebut my substance with substance of their own, with intelligence, going, I will give them a five. I offer them $5.
And what is it they would have to prove to you?
I've yet to have a trumpeter be able to react with intelligence to my content. All they end up just saying is there's some label they try, some sort of abuse, but they never have substance. And I keep saying, please reply to my content with substance. I must have said it 3,000 times over the last 5 years.
Well, let's get to that. What are the Democrats going to do? Let's say that they took over everything right now. What policies would be all that different? I mean, the Democrats aren't in favor of letting the caravan in. I mean, they have a constituency that is just as, not quite as fearful of immigration. but they're not in favor of open borders.
No, of course not. That wouldn't go down well at all. But if you ask a Republican that, they wouldn't vote a trumpet voter, they wouldn't necessarily understand that. Of course they're not in favor of open borders. And the immigration problem is made by the Republican Party virtually in its entirety. It could have been solved at any time in a bipartisan fashion of the last 10 years. It's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that's basically responsible for the problem. They want cheap labor. And I'm not saying they're right or wrong. Maybe it's right. That's fine. I don't care. But they want cheap labor, and they don't want to enforce what the obvious solution to illegal immigration, which is to ensure that they don't employ illegal people. If that's what your concern is, they don't. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce does not care a damn. They want them, but they want to have their politicians that they buy. They want the politicians to blame the immigrants for everything. Obviously, immigration is very good for the economy.
But I don't see a policy coming out from Democrats that says, hey, we welcome a lot more immigrant workers, and we're going to bring in as many as we can as soon as you give us power. I have not seen that much of them.
They're not going to say that because people are fearful of that. And to be honest, even I wouldn't like the idea of, like, unleashing...
Okay, so they want to do it, but they're just going to lie about wanting
to... No, I think the solution is to have... The issue has always been, how do you... And I, again, I'm not an expert of this. I've not written a chapter about immigration and stuff like that. So, but to me... the solution is finding some sort of to legalize whatever the number is, 20 million, what's the number, 20 million? People have been in the country legally for a long period of time and they've got nowhere to go. You can't just chuck out 20 million people, as I understand it. They've nowhere to go. So in some way, creating citizenship for a large swath of these people. And I think that they've been close to bipartisan solutions to this problem for years, but you know, the GOP don't want to play that card because they don't want to. They like to excite the base.
Yeah, but I mean, the Democrats, you know, have their own constituencies too, which are fearful of immigration, whether it's white voters or unions who want to limit the number of people that come in, or certain sectors of the economy that want to get protections from the Democratic Party against foreign competition. I mean, that exists too. And it's not like Democrats go into these negotiations without any demands. I mean, Sanders, for instance, during the last immigration, bill they debated dollars for some amorphous youth, employment program to protect certain constituencies from foreign competition. So it's not like they're like, hey, we like foreigners and want them to come here, which is where I would probably put my preferred policy, but it's I don't see them as that much different than Republicans. It's just the Republicans tend to base it more on fear and anxiety, where the Democrats just don't push for more immigration.
And maybe if they had pushed for it more, they wouldn't have got Congress back.
Yeah, I guess that tells us something about Democratic voters. I mean, they're fearful of immigrants too, and they don't really see the positive benefits of immigration.
I just said that, you know, if two-thirds of Republican voters have got racist tendencies, I think one-third of Democrats do, too. Of course they're there. And they're there in poverty-stricken states.
As long as they keep playing to that, they're not going to wind up with policies that are that much different than what
the Republicans... Now you're being a libertarian again, and I get it. It's wonderful. but it doesn't get you power. Now... I'm not telling people how to get power other than to reduce the amount of money in politics, because that's the major corrupting force. You're talking about everyone being a saint. And, you know, expecting it's a saintly view you have, and I'm not quite there, and I certainly wouldn't promote it in a book, because I try remain within basic orthodoxy of where the American public is. So my smart party agenda would actually, in spite of my book appearing to be polarizing and me appearing to be polarizing when I attack Trump voters, the agenda I have, I've carefully made it so that probably 80% of Americans could possibly agree with it. So it's not, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to create something polarizing. So when someone like yourself who's acting like there's a more pure heart there, and more, but I just don't. I just think that's asking too much right now. We've got to fix the plumbing.
Well, I mean, sure, and all change that's going to come is going to be incremental. But at the end of the day, if I'm going to argue for something, it's not going to be, well, here's a slightly less bad policy.
Well, but the trouble is that the change we're getting is we're on a direct trajectory where things are just going to get worse, and it's something you should agree with here. The basic underlying problem with America, I would argue, is the income discrepancy trends that we've seen in the last 30 years. I'm not against income discrepancy. I'm really concerned about these trends. And therefore, if you project those trends forward for the next 30 years, if we don't do something to mitigate it, where is America going to be? And hopefully people can figure that out for themselves. Because all the problems we're having now are very much to do with money. The fact that Congress is not paying attention to the will of the people on issues where 80% of the people care or have a view, and they're being ignored by Congress. Now, that might change right now to some extent. I don't promote gun control per se, but what I do argue is America has the most infantile gun culture on the planet, and Americans need to understand one simple thing, that more guns, as a general rule, don't make you safer.
Yeah, and but I think there's one issue here that you have to grapple with, is that on the one hand, there are issues where you think that the leaders should be listening to the people, and on the other hand, there are issues where the people should be listening to the leaders. And it's not consistent, and I understand why it wouldn't be consistent, but it's, you know, there are things that the public wants that I think would be terrible, terrible policy, and the people who study policy would say it would be
like
terrible
what?
Policy.
Like what?
So
I'm going to agree with you, I'm sure, because your point is indisputable.
And let me say it works on the opposite way too. There are going
to
be things.
Yeah, I'm sure your point is.
But
I just would like to think of an.
Right.
Yeah, just come up with an example. But I'm sure you're right. I'm not questioning that.
So let's go back to immigration. If, you know, when I do polls on immigration, you wind up with a lot of people who think that there's all sorts of immigration conspiracies and want to limit immigration because of that. I mean, in that sense, I would rather have, you know, I think there's a lot of studies that say immigration is a net positive.
Oh, it's a massive net positive. It's a massive gain for the economy. 50% of Fortune 500 companies were founded by an immigrant or a son of an immigrant, right? So the cheap labor should not be something to be scared about. Less expensive. These are jobs that Americans weren't willing to do. And you know there are so you get rid of the cheap labor, there are consequences for that. But you know, maybe your products go up. And you know, since the struggling class in America, which you guys often call middle class or whatever, because that's such an amorphous term, but you know, their income, their spending ability hasn't changed much in 30 years. And so getting them to pay far more for fruits and vegetables will just drive them into McDonald's and they become more obese.
Yeah, so that's an important one. Another one I would say, too, is tariffs. You have a lot of support for tariffs in this country, and I think, you know, the experts who study this would say, no, tariffs are not good.
Well, that's another funny thing. First of all, when it comes to free trade, I'm not a purist, but obviously the concept of free trade is somewhat correct. So I like free trade as a general rule. But what's so funny is when if you take the three what I would call sort of intellectual pillars of being a Republican, of being a conservative, and you could agree with them or not, it doesn't matter. But the things you could debate were free trade, national security, and something else. But, you know, and they were like, those concepts of being a conservative were thrown out of the window in about 1 month after Trump was elected. So really, the things that they stood for. Oh, and financial discipline. Sorry, the third thing. Financial discipline, i.e. not increasing the debt. Those are their pillars of what they stood for. And I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but they were at least intellectual pillars. And they've gone.
Yeah, they're gone. And
so they don't really stand for anything right now.
Yeah, the Republicans are very good at standing for something when they're not,
yes.
When they don't have the checkbook. You know, but all of a sudden what we've seen is that the Democrats are really concerned about the debt and the deficit, you know, which,
well,
as soon as they get the checkbook, that'll be a secondary thought, too.
But to be fair, after the 2009 reflationary infrastructure spend, Obama did a lot to reduce the deficit or try and reduce those trends, and he was very successful, and Bill Clinton did the same thing. If you look at the Depression and the Great Recession, that was caused by unfettered capitalism. It was caused by the Republican Party. And when it happens again, which could well happen, we're seeing more unfettered capitalism now. You're stimulating, and greed, you're stimulating an already stimulated economy, which is very dangerous. And now we won't have the cheap money to save us, maybe, next time around. So these economic collapses are caused by unfettered capitalism.
I'm sure there are people who would disagree with that.
I know that. Wow. Well.
Greenspan has admitted it, and he was a libertarian.
Oh, I don't know if I would, you know.
You should be debating this with Alan Greenspan, not with me. I'm not in anything like his caliber.
No, but I guess just to get back to this other point is that, you know, there are times where democracy is good because the people have opinions that, you know, are sort of, you know, in the right direction, and other times where it's in the wrong direction. And we're sort of stuck in a place where, you know, we want more democracy, but we realize at the same time that people often, you know, have really wrong ideas about what's good for the economy. But
look, it's not like...
Sometimes they make bad policy.
It's not like... you would be a libertarian, you disagree with this. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not a pacifist or a non-pacifist. It doesn't matter. But, you know, obviously the army is nationalized. The post office, and that works. That, in Americans' eyes, that works beautifully. Healthcare decisions should be nationalized. They should not be a motivation of profit. Prison and incarceration and prison running prisons should not be profitized. That's nuts. So money is so corrupting, and so you've got to, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for ways of taking as much money out of the political equation as you corrupting money as you can out of the equation as possible, and then allow people to make decisions. But I mean, obviously, the argument about America being a democracy or a republic and all that stuff, at the end of the day, I still regard it as, you know, the people's vote should drive policy, especially on most domestic issues.
But here's the thing, is that a lot of people look at market failures and they forget that there's such a thing as government failure, and they think that money is corrupting, but fail to realize that power is too. It's just there are different incentive structures that lead to corruption within government than within markets. And we need to be cognizant of those as well.
But I still feel like you say, you know, government is corrupted because there's too much money in government, in the way officials are elected.
But on the other hand, if you say that Republicans lie and they're corrupt because they want to stay in power,
careful of the word of the corruption. I said corruption is a nonpartisan issue. So don't let, you know, when, you know, so you got to be more careful with that. Obviously, they've been in power and they've had unchecked power now for the last two years or so. So they are probably by definition more corrupt, but that's an accident of the timing, and hopefully that the balance, there'll be some balance restored.
Well, guys, our time is running out.
Well, it looks like we solved all of America's problems. So
yeah, everything is fine now. We wake up and it's all good. It's been a great hour. And, of course, Dr. Joe Yusinski, our in-house conspiracy political professor from Miami. And of course,
rapidly thinking Miami, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and myself, nothing. And, of course, our guest, second time on the show, and friend of the show, and we hope to see him back again. Website, stupidpartyland.com, and he has a couple of books to check out. Deliverance is one that I recommend. Patrick Attendale, thank you for being here, guys.
Well, thank you very much for having me on and engaging in a really fun debate.
All right. Thanks for coming on. This is great.
Thanks a lot.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.